brought to you by GMSDC Radio and broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia. It's time for Let's Talk Small Business with your host, Stacy Key.
Good morning and welcome to this edition of Let's Talk Small Business. This is Stacy Key, your host. If you are an entrepreneur or a small business, this is the show for you. We air every Tuesday at 11:30 at Business Radio X. Please join us as we talk about the issues that affect the engine that drives the American economy, and that is small business. We're continuing our series on financial literacy, and financial information. And today we've brought you a heavy hitter. Mr. Rodney Sampson is with us. He's a lot of things. As you look at his bio, he's co-founded many things. He's the author, published author of Kingonomics. He is the go-to guy if you want to talk to about angel investing. So, Rodney, thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I was telling him before we aired, I am seeing him everywhere. So we're very fortunate to have him with us today. We had to work some magic, and our people had to call his people, and those people called somebody else, and here we are. So tell me how you... give us your story. You've got a story. It's an interesting story. You've co-founded just about... many things. You've got the Opportunity Hub. You're a published author. Tell us your story.
Wow. Let's see. Well, I'm a proud Atlanta native, number one.
Wow. Now that's rare. The fact that you're an Atlanta native.
And that I'm proud. A proud Atlanta native.
Yeah, the Atlanta native. Proud right. Is understood.
I am still proud to be. I think Little John said it the best. Forever, I love Atlanta. Right.
Yes.
So. I've been on a 15-plus year journey as an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. and 15 years ago, there were not really any spaces you could go to, any mentors. You just kind of learned the ecosystem mm-hmm. as you went along. And so I've been fortunate enough to have great co-founders along the way, have had a couple of exits from some companies.
Which is good, that you learn as much from those as you do from anything else.
Exactly. So, mm-hmm. you know, the exit of actually selling a company, it being acquired, is a learning process in itself.
It is.
So being afforded that opportunity and being connected to companies that have gone from ideation to exit, some acquired by other companies, some haven't gone public, mm-hmm. You sort of learn along the way. And I think it was probably about 10 years into that journey, I launched a small venture fund, which mm-hmm. was really an experiment. Had never done that before.
See, that whole venture fund, and so you were a pioneer back then to be launching a venture fund. There wasn't anyone else in that space.
Well, there were a few thousands of venture funds.
African American.
So when you start looking at African American launched funds, it's no, particularly okay. the riskiest types mm-hmm, of funds. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So yeah. I always often call those types of things experiments. We invested in, I would say, 10 startups, two still survived, one did exit, which is kind of the modalities of how funds work. In 2010, I started looking, I guess, for more definitive purpose in my career and life, mm-hmm. and that's how I kind of embarked along this whole Kingonomics philosophy and started looking at what Dr. King was doing before he transitioned. And everything else, you know, kind of spiraled from there. But I'm a lifelong entrepreneur.
Okay.
Even when I was an undergraduate, even in medical school, even in getting my MBA, I owned a business and I had co-founders. And they weren't always successful. Mm-hmm. But,
again, you learn as much from those that are not.
Absolutely.
In fact, sometimes you learn even more. So tell me, what made you go down the path of the book or with Kingonomics?
I'll go back to when I was 8 years old. I remember the AME church over in Southwest Atlanta that I recited I Have a Dream by Dr. King, which actually was entitled Normalcy No More. I Have a Dream was the ending cadence, but the actual speech that he gave at the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. that's a big part of it.
Yes, it was.
The Jobs and Freedom part. Was what inspired me to kind of look at it. So looking at Atlanta, looking at King's economic legacy, and looking how we could even build upon a lot of the innovation around contracting that Maynard Jackson did in mm-hmm. the 70s.
He pioneered that's for sure.
Absolutely. And so I was looking backwards to see how we could look forward. How can we mm-hmm. create this, you know, innovative, entrepreneurial, investment-driven society as, you know, a ways of creating better communities. And that's how I kind of settled on the iconic, you know, figure, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
So what's the foundation of the Kingonomics, that whole theory and that? What's the foundation of that?
Well, that's an excellent question. On an annual basis, there are probably thousands of entrepreneurs that we come in contact, whether it's one-on-one, whether it's coming through our opportunity hub, or they show up at our large-scale events. Most people are looking for money. Most people are looking to make money. And sometimes for the right reasons, mm-hmm. and sometimes not for the right reasons. So I needed a pushback, and Kingonomics became that pushback. Why do you actually want to be in business? Mm-hmm. Why do you want to be an entrepreneur? You know, why should you be MSDC certified? Why should you get contracting? What makes you different than the average person who just wants to get a contract mm-hmm. and make money? And so we actually flipped capitalism on its head and said, there are intangible currencies that have greater value than the tangible money that we all, you know, want mm-hmm. to accumulate and use. So, like, for instance, the first currency we talk about is service. And we talk about how you can serve your way to opportunities. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, for instance, having the let's say you're serving on a nonprofit board, somebody has a startup, and they somehow get connected to the board,
Absolutely.
They get an opportunity to meet you. Mm-hmm. Whereas otherwise, you being an influencer keeping a very, very busy schedule may not just automatically connect with someone just because they want to connect.
Correct.
Right? But through your service, you get to see another side of a person. So we talk about how to leverage that currency. We also talk about the currency of innovation and the currency of transparency, the currency of reciprocity, the currency of courage. That's a very, very important one, particularly in, you know, tough economic times. So if you look at most people who've had some type of success or significance in their career, they've probably accumulated a lot of these intangible currencies mm-hmm. that then manifest as tangible. So it's really the philosophy of entrepreneurship, mm-hmm. Which we think is very important. You need to embrace some type of cause-driven philosophy of why you want to make money mm-hmm. and why you want to do good.
Okay, so that's the foundation.
That is.
Okay, so using the Kingonomics approach, you've got a solid foundation for the business that keeps you kind of centered and focused as you go forward and make all that money.
Absolutely.
Okay. And so from Kingonomics, we've got the Opportunity Hub. Tell us about the Opportunity Hub.
So we released Kingonomics last January on the King holiday. And my team wanted to do just a simple book signing. And we were going to do it.
Not simple. You can't do simple. No.
We didn't want to get so distracted in the launch of the book that we were doing something. And we ended up getting very distracted. So we started reaching out to experts. And these experts were angel investors, heads of VCs, people who had started companies and had done well. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a unique criteria for an expert. It's not just the opportunist that wants to show up and sell you something
yes.
and call themselves an
expert. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
A lot of those.
Oh, we've got lots.
Right. So we ended up getting people saying, I'm going to fly in. I want to be a part of this. Mm-hmm. And so we said, well, when people get here, what are they going to do? We don't just want to sign books. So we created a conference around it. And so we held our first annual large-scale conference. It was initially branded Kingonomics Access to Innovation, mm-hmm. Entrepreneurship, and Investment Conference.
Oh, okay.
We attracted about 1,000 adults and a couple of hundred teens mm-hmm. at that event. So, of course, last year was the 50th anniversary of the March on
yes.
Washington for Jobs and Freedom, and we wanted to do something unique in Washington, D.C. So we did a second conference in
okay.
D.C., and we attracted about 1,500
oh,
adults
wow.
and 500 teens. Partially because we partnered with Shark Tank to do its first minority casting call at the conference. So, of course, that attracted
okay,
a lot
yeah,
of people
yeah. oh, absolutely.
As well.
But smart for partnering.
Absolutely. So between January and August, we had a lot of people saying, okay, events are great, but what can I do 365 days a year to launch, grow, scale mm-hmm. my business? Mm-hmm. And so I remember a portfolio company called eFactor.com. I'd invested in Silicon Valley, and they were originally located in what's called a co-working space. The first co-working spaces come out of Silicon Valley. Actually, Citizen Space will go down in history around 05, 06 of being that first shared collaborative co-working mm-hmm. space. Today, there are over 5,000 co-working spaces around the world. The industry predicts there will be 8,000 in the future. A lot of major corporations are also looking at the collaborative workspace model. I know AT&T has a space like that.
Coca-Cola is looking at that as they're doing the a lot of the
absolutely, and they're partnering with our industry to bring those types of best practices as well. So when I started looking at Atlanta's footprint, I was like, okay, we have our colleagues in Buckhead at ATV. We have the incubator, the longstanding incubator at Tech at ATDC. Mm-hmm. And then you have Rome up in Alpharetta. There was really nothing downtown. And so we decided to open the first opportunity hub in downtown Atlanta.
And so tell us about, since you've opened it, what have you seen in terms of collaboration, innovation? Tell me some of the outgrowth of that.
So we've seen a couple hundred companies, you know, kind of pass through our doors at some level over the last year. Some are actually in the ideation stage, so these are pre-revenue startups. Some have $100 million a year in revenue and just want to be inside of a open collaborative environment. So we have to actually foster the collaboration. What's interesting is people, by design, for whatever reason today, just don't come together. So we have to actually be intentional about doing it. And we didn't want it to always happen in the form of like a networking event mm-hmm. or a cocktail reception, because sometimes
it's more social.
Yeah, the social events mm-hmm. can be good, but can also be a distraction. So we wanted to create this environment whereby companies, so we started matching certain people up together, certain companies up together, and we kind of look, take a step back and look down and say, okay, this startup needs to connect with this person. This person needs to connect with that person. So we sort of help with the matchmaking process. Mm-hmm. Now we're starting to layer that with programming, like our Mentors in Residence program. We are building out a very, very aggressive program with 100 mentors in residence. These mentors will keep office hours, where they'll come in free to members. Mm-hmm. They'll teach a class, and they'll offer, you know, kind of light mentorship for entrepreneurs of all stages.
You know, you raise a question. That co-working environment, does it work for all stages of businesses, or is there certain businesses that it works better for?
You know, I mean, at a certain point, it depends on the size of the team. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For startups, early stage, or SMEs, and, you know, for me, an early stage company is still a company that's doing less than $100 million. You know, in the macro sense of economics, until you're doing over $100 million, now we consider that to be a growth stage company. Mm-hmm. But for a lot, it's still early stage, either because they've grown very, very quickly, mm-hmm. so the early stage of their growth, or there's still a lot of opportunity for them to scale. Now, some people may say, oh, $10 million a year is a large company, and well, it is.
And they do. Yeah. They say if you can get over the million hump,
yeah.
then your chances of being successful are great.
Exactly.
Less than that, it gets a little shaky.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it depends on the industry a mm-hmm. little bit, mm-hmm. but I also think it depends on the personalities of the co-founders and the teams. Perhaps your accounting team may not be best served in being in a co-working space, but perhaps your business development team could. It's a perfect.
You know what? I think you've hit something with the business development team commingling like that.
Absolutely.
Again, you share ideas. You can talk about clients. You might. Yeah. There's clear
exactly.
advantage for a business
exactly.
development team.
Right.
That's actually an excellent idea. You would want your business development team to be in a co-working environment sharing.
Exactly. I mean, if your sales team is always in their cubicle or in their office, then when are they out selling?
You don't
right?
want to. In fact, for a sales team, you don't want them in the office
exactly.
at all. If you see them a lot, there's a problem.
Exactly.
And so, you don't want to see them very often.
So I think every company at every stage, we're even seeing very large corporates like American Insurance. Mm-hmm. You know, they're looking at getting their agents into collaborative workspaces because that.
It fosters innovation.
It fosters
teamwork.
You know,
there's
exactly.
lots of
you get it.
Outgrowth.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think any industry can benefit. Even industries. I mean, you could literally take 100 companies that are all doing $10 million a year, and if they agree to spend a certain amount of time in a space, a certain amount of time a month, just the lead generation, just the comparing of notes.
is invaluable.
Exactly. They could be two staffing companies. One's doing business with Wells Fargo. One is doing business with Bank of America. No one's talking until they show up or until there's some reactive response to an industry. Mm-hmm. So the application of the co-working model
yes.
can be applied whether it's inside of a GMSDC, whether it's inside of a corporation, whether it's inside of a city or university. You know, it has to be tweaked for
that environment.
The environment, but it's a
yes.
viable model.
I agree. And so to your point, GMSDC, we're opening up our business development center, which is just that, a collaborative space. It's not okay. a spot where you can live, but come together, collaborate, share ideas. That's exactly the model that we're going, the path that we're going down.
Sure.
Yeah, because it works.
Absolutely.
For teams, it works for all kinds of reasons. So we're going to transition our discussion to this whole finance discussion.
Okay.
Because in most cases, you hear the number one reason that small businesses, and we use the term small loosely because small could be a billion-dollar business, they can't scale or grow is because of resources, and the primary resource is capital.
Right.
And so let's talk about angel investing. Let's talk about this capacity building with finances.
Sure.
Because that seems to be the number one reason.
Well, when you look at, capital raising, I always go back to our philosophy. I think a lot of growth and scale also starts with mindset. And a particular challenge for companies who experience, or people in general who, Stacy, experience early success, mm-hmm. success can breed complacency.
Absolutely.
And
I agree.
We see that inside of organizations. We see that just in institutions.
Yes.
People get settled in their ways. And it's difficult for them to change.
Absolutely.
Even though they know change is inevitable, the early innovators now become, against change because it doesn't look like what they thought it should
look exactly
like.
That's exactly right.
Right. So mm-hmm. we can have a whole conversation
absolutely.
Just about that.
Innovation and change, that's a whole
right.
other show.
So once you shift your mindset or shift the perspective of why you are in business, that's why I go back to that philosophy.
That
you're
foundation.
You're not really in business just to provide for yourself and yours. You are responsible for the opportunity that you've been given, whether that opportunity is creating jobs. So if you create jobs, then you have a responsibility to those employees.
That's exactly correct.
And you also have they're basically in your stewardship in mm-hmm. a sense. So mm-hmm. you now have a responsibility just like you have in a sense to your children or your family mm-hmm. where you want to foster their growth. That growth is determined by how you build the company.
Exactly.
If you're going to increase that.
Decisions and actions you take
exactly.
can impact not just you, as you said, but it impacts the whole team and all your employees.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So traditionally, when we look at capital and even culturally, but I think just as American businesses in general, we are taught to look only at SBA lending or bank loans.
Traditional.
Right. That's
it's
traditional.
Easy. Somehow the perception is that that's easy, although
right,
yeah, because there's money out there,
yeah.
is whether you can get it or not,
yeah.
based on your business.
Well,
model.
We have like a paperwork driven, business class in a sense. It's like if I can fill out the paperwork, then I can get
the money.
Right, not whether or not you're best suited for it, or you're innovative, or you have created the best team. It's just if I fill out the, and I know you deal with this with certification all the time. People think if I just complete the paperwork.
Contracts will fall from the sky. That is a correct statement.
Exactly.
Yes.
And it's the same thing with capital. So, if you look at even how pop culture defines it today, you've got traditional lending and then you've got Shark Tank. That's what people see, right? So they either know I'm going to go sit with my banker and I'm going to ask, she or he mm-hmm. for a loan, and they're going to flip the dice and decide, not this is a process, it's a system, and,
yep.
They have metrics yep. or what have you. Or they're saying, there's Shark Tank. If I can just get on to Shark Tank and get in front of Damon John, get in front of Lori
Barbara.
But
the percentage of people that get there is
exactly.
so very small.
Right.
And that's why people go to traditional, whether it's a big bank or a community bank or wherever you go. But there's something else in the middle.
Right. And so we've been focusing on what's in the middle.
Thank
right?
you. And we appreciate you for that.
So, I brought a few statistics for me, but let me back up just a little bit. So, one of the things that we do at the Opportunity Hub, and we're going to make this more consistent, is teaching this seriously, are you fundable day?
Are you bankable, is what we call it.
Right, mm-hmm. there you go. And so we break down the different types of capital, mm-hmm. debt, equity, mm-hmm. You know, even sweat, you know, how much capital you have
in it. Oh, absolutely.
You know, so you start with the sweat. Then you go from that to hopefully the family and friends.
Yep.
And then you go to get the seed capital and the early stage capital before you even get to mm-hmm. an angel, before you even get to a venture capitalist. And so because we start hearing these buzzwords, we start automatically, oh, I've got to go meet with a VC, and I got to go meet with a VC. And it's like VCs don't traditionally fund pre-revenue or early-stage companies. They're looking to help companies get traction.
They're looking to make money.
Exactly.
They're looking to make money.
And they want to take a risk on a company that, you know, is scalable and has
can get to $200 million. Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So culturally, you know, as minority suppliers or minority business owners, we have to look at the bigger picture. When we start looking at family and friends and seed and angel, well, if the average net worth of an African American family is less than $5,000, I mean, my friend Willie Watkins.
Is that the number?
That's 2010 census. Okay.
Okay. Let's just
not income, but net worth.
Okay, hold on. But okay. Let's pause for that. The average net worth.
Yes.
Of African Americans nationwide is $5,000.
It's actually $4,800. It's less than $5,000. My friend Willie Watkins, your friend, he couldn't even do a good burial for that. So there's a, when I talk about mindset.
That's a good dinner.
Right.
You got a group.
Right. That's a reception, right? Average net worth of Latino Americans is $7,600. Asian Americans is $76,000. White Americans, $110,000. So there's a huge gap there. So when I have a startup and I go to my uncle, he doesn't have 5K or 10K. Now, he may have a good job because, you know, we spend $1 trillion.
Our buying power.
Right. We brag on the buying power, but no one wants to talk
about wealth.
Wealth. And, you know, assets minus liabilities.
Equal wealth.
That's your net worth.
Yes.
So, like, here's some other statistics. So, last year, 2013, these are from the Angel Capital Association. Nearly $25 billion was invested, okay, in 70,000-plus companies. 45% of that money, so $12.5 billion, went to seed and early stage. So these are pre-revenue, early stage, maybe have one or
45%,
two contracts.
45%? Was that
45 billion? 45%. That's $12.5 billion.
Okay, 45%. Okay.
Responsible for nearly 300,000 new jobs.
Wow.
So we talk about small business, but the new jobs are actually being created at the seed and early stage level.
Which is, you know, that's early. That's pre-small business because they're still early.
Well, they consider that to be
small business.
Startups to SMEs.
Yes.
Okay. There could be a company that's doing $10 million a year that gets $2 to $3 million to go into a different. You know, maybe they want to create some coders so they can go apply for a contract that's tech-driven or something. Mm-hmm. You know, so there are ways to pivot from a service business. Because mm-hmm. the other challenge, just to go a little deeper here, service businesses many times are not as scalable as consumer products
yes.
or as tech companies.
Absolutely.
Or as
because I'm providing the service as the entrepreneur, and it's
exactly.
only one of me.
Right.
So that's the issue.
So investors, whether they be debt or equity, are looking at not is this scalable all the time from, you know, the point of getting an exit, but is it scalable from the point
growth.
That I've increased my chances of at least getting my principal back?
Right. You yeah. know, growth. It's got to be about growth.
We start there. Now here's some other alarming statistics that go back to that wealth gap. Out of that $25 billion, less than 1% goes to African American companies. Less than 1% goes to Latino companies, and about 7%, which is still not equity and parity, goes to women-led companies.
Is that because they're not going after the angel investing market? Why is that?
There are a few dynamics, I believe.
Okay.
One is being aware of this investment class, number one.
So they're not even aware of the opportunity around angel investing.
Exactly.
So they're not even going for it.
They're not even aware of the opportunities, or they're not even open many times to exchanging equity for ownership in their company.
And that's the issue. Right. And what traditionally you found with minority companies, they don't want to give up ownership.
Right.
And angel investors want ownership in
exactly.
the business.
Right.
And so that's
And there are ways to structure. I mean, many times we'll structure something as a convertible note, which is debt. And then that usually may convert to equity at some point of different milestones. So mm-hmm. there are ways to structure it, particularly if you are a scalable company or you have revenue. I think just the engagement process has to be addressed. One is knowledge of the space.
And then education.
Education. Mm-hmm. Well, and before that is exposure.
Yes.
You know, so like Shark Tank exposes, you know, Lion's Den, Dragon's Den, they expose people, oh, there's this other investment
Investors.
Class. I'm intrigued. Then it's how do you engage with angels or venture capitalists, you know, in the form of, so that's going to require you to really, you know, step up your business practices. Like you need to have your operating agreement.
Oh, absolutely.
Together.
You got to be buttoned up if you're looking at angel. You got to be buttoned up anyway. But if you're looking at angel investors, it's got to be
right.
buttoned up all the way.
Right. It's like GMSDC Plus. We need to create another certification, right, that says, check operating agreement, check private placement memorandum. Check.
See, a lot of that's checked as part of certification, but for a different reason.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So because the operating agreement for taking on equity investors is going to be different if you own 100, you know, 100% of
yeah.
it or what
yeah.
have you. So now here's the thing. Then you get back to the thing about angel investing is it can't really be there's no federal jurisdiction or state jurisdiction around angels have to invest
today.
In minorities and women.
Right. Today there's no.
There's not. One, because it's private capital.
Right.
And it's hard to to basically tell people to do their own money. Comes down to it. But there are ways to incentivize. Like Georgia, for instance, has the Invest Georgia tax incentive.
Mm-hmm.
If you invest $50,000, if you're an accredited investor and you invest $50,000 in a startup or Georgia company, you can get up to a certain amount of taxes alleviated, which that's an incentive. I'm working on a federal piece of legislation called the Angel Act, which is an acronym for Accelerating Neighborhood Growth via Equity and Lending. It's a simple amendment to the New Markets Tax Credits legislation,
okay.
which would include not just investment in these Quailuck bees that are located in quote-unquote low-income communities,
mm-hmm.
but investment in incubators or accelerators or co-working spaces as well to help get more capital to minority and women-led startups. And we're getting traction with that. So there are ways to incentivize investors.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest thing is angel investing is a very personal thing. If I have to choose whether I'm going to invest in Stacy or my nephew, if I'm going to lose this money, I get more brownie points from grandmama, right, if I invest in my nephew.
Yes, that's correct.
Right. And I get brownie points from my wife if I invest in my son. I might like what Stacy is doing.
But right.
But I really have an incentive. So a lot of angel investing can be family.
It's personal. I didn't realize it had that personal element in angel investing.
Exactly, because it's kind of like that angel shows up to save the day.
Got it.
You
okay.
know?
Okay.
But then also there are angels who are newer towards certain industries. Why? Because they're maybe passionate about it. Maybe they had a startup that was very successful in a particular industry, and they want to see that industry expand. So there's so many different intangible ways of why we decide we're going to write a check and invest in a particular company. It's not always so structured and paperwork driven, and you know it's very touchy feely in a sense. Angels also tend to invest geographical. You know, I want to be able to jump in a car and drive 2 hours away maximum to get to your company, see what you're doing, sit down, look at you in the eyes.
Again, personal.
Exactly.
You know what? That's interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I didn't realize any of that from the angel investor. Again, I looked at it as an investment,
right.
but not the personal aspect of it, which driving it, that touching and hands-on.
And most angels are writing checks just because they want to get a return on the investment. But most of us, when we write that check, we've parted with the money. So a lot of our due diligence is not on whether or not you are a great person and you have a great idea and we think you'll do well is, are you someone that I'm really going to want to be in relationship with or legal covenant with for the next 5 to 7 years? You know,
a whole different perspective.
And I can tell pretty much in the first few minutes of just talking to somebody if whether or not I really want you in my mind space.
That's
for the
exactly,
next 5, 7
yeah, that's
years.
Exactly. You can quickly you can determine that.
Exactly. And I think people not being aware of that, that's why we get pitched so wrong. Because people think, oh my God, you're just this very selfish investor. You just want to make money and it's me against you. And I've got to get in front of you very quickly. I've got to pitch you. I don't care what your name is. I don't care what you're dealing with today. I don't care what your industry is. I haven't looked you up online. I haven't checked out your LinkedIn profile. It's me. It's my contract because I've got to get this money so that I can apply to this contract.
Right.
And that's not the way angel investing works.
You know what? We have got to do, we're wrapping up here.
Sure.
We have got to do part two of this because we've got to have more discussion around the angel investing. We've got to talk about the venture capital because a little bit it's different.
Right.
And so, first of all, I want to thank you for joining us today. But for our listeners, you stay tuned. We're going to have to do part two with Rodney Sampson because there is more to come around this whole angel investing and venture capital because we've really got to do some education here. So first, I want to thank our sponsors, the Wells Fargo, the Coca-Cola Company, Georgia Power, and Ronstadt. For without you, this would not be possible. So we'll see you next week on Let's Talk Small Business, the engine that drives America. Take care.